Morning. Bit too hot. You all right? I hope you are. I hope you are. Me? Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, all good. Yeah. Going to a wedding later. No, I'm not. I'm not. Okay. Best man. No, I'm not. I'm not. I'm joking. I'm joking. I'm joined by not my usual producer, Little Harry. I'm joined by Jack this morning. Jack, how are you, sir?
Hello, hello. How you doing, Bo? I'm doing good, thanks.
Hope you're doing well. The glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. Thank you for joining me. Without you, isn't a thing. Thank F. It's Friday, though. It was like a bit of a long week to me. I don't know about you guys. TGI Friday. It's now 1 minute past eight in the AM, British summertime, on Friday, the 14th of August, in the year of our Lord, 2026. It's quite enough faffing about, though, isn't it? There's no need for that amount of fannying around. The sheer volume of fannying around there was off the charts. Let's just get straight into it. What's the legacy corporate lamestream media banging on about this morning? What's that cabal of evil, quite frankly, evil Fleet Street editors lying to us about by omission, if by nothing else? Are they trying to cram into our eyeballs and brain box against our will? Not necessarily against your will, isn't it? You don't have to pay attention. Well, one thing to say, the big news of the day, isn't it? Of the actual full news cycle for today, the 14th, will be the Clacton result, Nige's reforms, Clacton result. But that was too late for the papers when the papers go to print yesterday. It's relatively early in the night they go to print usually, about 10, depending. But anyway, the result wasn't in at that point. So it's not on the front pages, but it is the main story and I want to get to it and talk all about it. So we'll just whip through the front pages a bit slightly quicker than usual. Also, the front pages today are, yeah, so, right, we've got houses burn and train derails on hottest day and Britain on fire. It's just sort of wall to wall that it's hot and there's been more wildfires, although an actual part of a town burnt down a bit and a train derailed. No one was killed, two people seriously injured, a few people. Anyway, the front pages are just nowhere near as important or interesting as the Claxon stuff. So let's whip through it a bit. The Times, the venerable Times. Something about Nicole Kidman at 59, don't care. Burnham bypassing villagers opposed to new asylum sites. This is part of the ongoing story, the Operation Schmear, as I call it. Operation Scatter. They don't want to just keep invaders. Let's not call them migrants, or certainly not asylum seekers or refugees, not even migrants. Invaders. They don't want to keep them necessarily in hotels because people don't like that, and that's a bit of a political hot potato. So to fix that, they'll smear them out into every corner of Britain, to tiny little villages and hamlets. Suddenly you've got a dozen Afghans living next to you. Right, okay. Or there'll be, for example, a specific example, a tiny little village in like Oxfordshire or whatever of like 400 people or less. Suddenly there's 12,000 young foreign men, just men, all young, living right on the outskirts of your village. Isn't that mad? Isn't that truly evil? Isn't that the final act in a string of evil events? Met chief and prosecutor clash over Levy failings. There was a murderer called Levy, his surname's Levy, murdered two women and raped a third, and was sort of allowed to get away with his crimes for longer than he really should have done. And the police, the London police, Met Police, blaming the CPS for failings. There's the police saying, it's not us. We did our job, essentially. It was your job, the Crown Prosecution Service, for not locking him up earlier. We just investigate the crimes. You're the ones who actually got to put him in prison. CPS hitting back over that, saying, it's not fair. That's not fair. That's not a good characterisation. You guys dropped the ball as well, though. All that crap. Someone who shouldn't have ever been in this country. Black dude. Houses burn and train derails on hottest day. Two seriously hurt in rail accident near Lewes. Wildfires destroy homes in West Midlands. So there's a picture. A lot of the papers go with the exact same picture. And you might think, when I first saw this morning, I thought, it's just a house, well, two house fires. It could have happened on any day of the year. What's this really got to do with wildfires? But when you see other pictures, other images, zoomed out, like helicopter or drone footage with like a much broader view, it's actually really quite extensive. Look, you can see there, that's another one burnt out. There's loads of buildings burnt out. It looks like there was a wildfire on the edge of town, right on the edge of town, you know, where the houses stop and fields start. Started there, and then it just sort of somehow swept through this town a bit, a fair bit, quite a lot of buildings destroyed. I say somehow. They're saying that, like, hot ash was raining down. And if your roof is, you know, tinder dry and, like, you know, tight, it wouldn't set alight to tiles, but if you've got other types of roofing, maybe the eaves are made of wood, tinder dry wood. Anyway, the damage was quite extensive. My first gut feeling of it's just a house fire or two somehow. No, it seems quite bad. It's quite bad. All right. Still don't put it down to global warming caused by man-made CO2 in the atmosphere. There's the train that derailed and some of the carriages flipped over. Is that to do with it was so hot that the rails warped and caused that? Don't know. They're not saying that exactly. One of the papers is asking that question, but it's not saying that exactly. Would be a bit of a coincidence, considering it was on a super hot day yesterday. Yesterday was super hot. Last night was a very, very close, muggy night. Thank God I got a fan, otherwise it would have been unbearable. Really, really warm. All right. The Daily Mail. Pure globalist slop. Occasionally pretending to be patriotic. Inferno on hottest day of year. Ramp up wildfires in Gulf streets of family homes. Yeah, streets. Yeah. It's quite a lot. Look, there's all burnt out houses there. Maybe later on one of the other pages you might see a bit more of a zoomed out one. And it's quite a lot of buildings. Quite a lot. Okay, we'll move on. We want to get to Nige and Clacton, don't we? The Mirror. Completely insane socialist Fabian Labour slop. Heatwave devastation. Homes destroyed as blazes rage in bone-dry conditions around country. Meanwhile, train crash horror. Terror, sorry. And rail chaos on hottest day of the year. They're all going with the same two stories of the train derailment and this fire in this little place. Britain on fire. Well done, well done. I hope you get a load of clicks and sell a load of papers off of that. Well done. Yeah, brilliant. The Star. Serious injuries after train derails on hottest day of the year. Horror on the 224. There you go. There's a picture of it. I mean, what else is there to say, really? Right, we'll crack on. The Tory graph. It's an interesting image. Obviously, I've opened the doors and people have got out. He's not just climbing on it for fun. He's obviously just got out. This is a mildly interesting story. Well, quite interesting story. China funding Palestine marches. You get this. US committee claims Beijing is supporting anti-Israel protests on British streets. So we need the US to tell us that China are supporting Palestine in Britain. I can't believe it. There's another story. Probably won't get to it, so I'll mention it now. Another story in the news today and yesterday, that these super dinghies, remember those super dinghies now, sort of all of a sudden, kind of, it's not all of a sudden, but it wasn't 2 years ago, whatever, super dinghies, remember me saying this one's like, is it like 10 metres long, 15 metres long, 40 foot long, whatever, you can get, if you really try, you get 200 plus people on them, it's like the size of a bouncy castle, or nearly, massive, massive inflatable dinghy, but they're manufactured in China. They've got to be sent 6,000 miles from China. I'm not saying the Chinese government necessarily funded that and facilitated all of that. Nonetheless. Chinese. And there's another story as well. We might get to it. Where Vodafone. The Vodafone company. Have given Care for Calais thousands of SIM cards just to give out for free with 6 months worth of data on it to our invaders. You invade our country from the Pas-de-Calais, illegally crossing the channel without a visa or a passport or anything, if not deliberately throwing your passport in the ocean, filming yourself doing it on your phone and gloating about it. When you get to the other side, Care for Calais, courtesy of Vodafone, will just give you a free SIM card for with 6 months data on it. Should we close every single one of those types of loopholes? Yes, of course. It's crazy. Well, thanks, Vodafone. Thanks for that. Appreciate that. All right, anyway, back to China. China pro-Palestine marches. China do seem like they spend a fair amount of time and energy destabilizing Britain, don't they? Is it me? Am I being paranoid? Have I got just some sort of crazy anti-Chinese bias for no real reason? Or is it a totally, totally legit concern? You can make your own minds up on that. Oh, there is, sorry, right there. Free Vodafone SIM cards handed out to small boat migrants. Okay. Lamy's eco project ordered to pay $400,000. £400,000, over $500,000. I read that story thinking, ooh, a little bit of dirt on Lamy. I'll read that. I've got a few seconds in my life to read that, but there's not much to it. Some organisation, he was just like, he did like some free work for once that has done something quite bad. In Central America or South America, they took the mickey, they were out of some woman by using her properties or property and then not paying her for it. And it is like bad and out of order. But it's not like it's David Lammy's company or anything. He just sort of once did some work for them for free or something. So it's like, I don't think that's much of a story. All right. The Metro. Ugh. The Metro. Ugh. Ugh. Making me feel sick. Ugh. Some sort of terrible stank coating the back of my throat. Ugh. Is that something? Something's died. The temperature soars past 38 degrees. Record 2.5 million trips to A&E, not just yesterday, it wasn't 2.5 million trips to A&E just yesterday, but 3,000 patients a day cared for in corridors. Nurses collapsing, a stifling heat takes its toll. Yeah, Mrs. Ed Balls, a.k.a. Yvette Cooper, as the new health secretary. Will she be able to turn the NHS around, make the NHS efficient and good, and have like a positive health outcomes for more people? Probably not. Now, if you keep flooding us with hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of new people every year on year, the NHS wasn't designed for that. Cannot, it's not sustainable, cannot deal with that. 3,000 patients a day cared for in corridors. But no limit on migration, no? Just cram more and more and more people in until saturation point. Got Labour MPs in the past talking about they want to get to saturation point. What does it matter if 20,000, 30,000 more people turn up? So what? Literally, they say that. So what? So the waiting list is slightly longer, so your classroom size is slightly bigger. Who cares? So what? Most important thing is that we give the poor and oppressed people of the world a place to live. 3,000 patients a day cared for in corridors. And when anyone brings up migration, even just putting a cap on more migration into this country, even that, not re-migration, just any number, any cap on the number, no. You get hit with the argument of we need more safe and legal routes, if anything. Can't have both things. You can't cram more and more and more people into this country and expect the NHS to work. Expect school sizes to not, classroom sizes not to be ridiculous. Expect there not to be a housing crisis. You end up with loads and loads of tent cities. In the end, shanty cities. Exactly like the third world. What? But then that's what the people that insist on cramming them in up to saturation point. That's what they want though, isn't it? Surely. What other explanation is it? They must want that. An NHS that's broken. Shanty towns. Oh, and of course, endless sex crime and organised crime, violent crime, mass casualty events. They must want that because it's the obvious cause and effect, isn't it? It's one step down the chain of all those consequences of cramming in millions of more foreign people every year on year. They must want that then, mustn't they? It's all right. It's all right. We've got Mrs. Ed Balls. She'll sort it out. Will she? Will she? The Guardian. Ooh. Smells like poop. Actual poop. Gross. Something about Sam Smith. Don't care. Is he still a thing? How is he still a thing? He's not still a thing. Gross, weirdo, degenerate freak. Universities fear financial turmoil amid slumping overseas students. Oh, well. Wish I had my tiny violin. It was a perfect example to... Should have got my tiny violin. I physically got a tiny violin. Someone sent one in to me for a life. Should have brought it. That was perfect for that. I didn't bring it on me, sorry. Oh, well. Universities fear financial turmoil. Good, if anything. Good. A lot of universities are just a hive of leftism. And globalism. Just a place where often foreign terrorists can just sit there and just harbour foreign terrorists often. Yeah. Again, invaders by another name. Come here as a foreign student. They finish their course, their nonsense course, some polytechnic somewhere, something that's barely university. And then they refuse to leave. Their visa runs out and they just refuse to leave. And then they get legal support, free, paid for by the state, in order to argue that they can't go back to their country of origin because of the ECHR, because of human rights. And then they can stay. And then they can bring over their family. Chain migration. The chain migration off the back of foreign students that have refused to leave after their course is big, really big. So, oh well. Universities might slump amid, might face turmoil amid a slump in overseas students. Good, good. There's too many universities. It completely devalued what a degree is, what it's worth. And just one more vehicle to get us invaded by racial, ethnic, tribal and religious enemies. So good. Oh, I'm supposed to care about the leftoid academy. The universities that for decades and decades and decades have really done not much more other than try and subvert our way of life. Good. Let them go through turmoil. Let loads of them close. PM angry as water firms add £3.4 billion to bills. Run the stories today in the news cycle. Across the big suppliers, there's a few, a handful, what, half a dozen? Well, there's more, but half a dozen or 10 big, big water suppliers in this country. Between them, lose billions of litres of water a day. And the bills just keep going up. They keep giving themselves, the senior people in those companies, bigger and bigger bonuses. The service is worse and worse and worse. And now the, what is it? Well, the equivalent of Ofcom, like the water regulating body, I remember what it's called, just given them the green light sort of legally to just increase people's bills massively. It's already locked in that they were going to increase massively between now and 2030. And they've given them the green light to increase them even more from 2030 onwards, even more. The Prime Minister is angry about that because you know no Stirling Burnham's listening. Yeah, he's a great listener. He hears you. He hears your concerns. He's interested in listening to the problems, not just insisting people bring him solutions. He's listening to the problems. He's listening to you. And he's angry. He's angry about it. Is he really going to do anything about it profoundly? No. He's just going to say some words. Yeah. Is he going to move the deck chairs on the sinking Titanic quarter of a mil? Maybe, at best. No Stirling Burnham. He's got the balls to do anything big, to make any big moves. Right, the eye paper, it's probably about the best you're going to get from Fleet Street on any given day. What are they going with? 24 million people face paying even more higher water bills to firms losing 1.2 billion litres a day from leaks. If it was 1.2 million litres a day, that would be concerning. 1.2 billion litres. I know when you measure vast amounts of water in litres, it sort of gives a crazy, slightly off impression of the scale of it. But still, 1.2 billion litres a day. But we're in a drought, aren't we? You're not allowed to fill a kiddie's swimming pool in the garden. You're not allowed to water your lawn because there's a hose pipe ban. 1.2 billion litres a day. Feels like it's barely functioning, right? The water regulator is set to give 5 suppliers the green light to increase bills by an additional £3.4 billion between them in the coming years. Ofwat, that's it, that's the regulator. Ofwat has already given firms permission to charge customers 36% more for their services between 2025 and 2030. But PM warns against blank check. He says, you can't think of the tax-paying Great British public as just a blank check. What are you going to do about it then, Andy? You're going to bring in a raft of legislation. There's no talk of that. There's no talk of that. You're going to start prosecuting the people that have obviously mismanaged it over decades. No, no talk of that. No. An inquiry into exactly what's gone wrong and what needs to happen. No. He's just going to say, don't treat us like a blank check. Well, thanks, Andy. Cheers for sticking up for us. Appreciate it. I'm glad you're angry about it. I'm really thankful for your performative anger for one news cycle. Thanks. 36% between 2025 and 2030. When I moved out and started paying bills for myself, it was almost straight after uni. I was in my early 20s. Water bills were very, very minimal. You had to pay Thames Water. I've always paid Thames Water because I used to live in the southeast, and even in the southwest, it's still Thames Water. So every bill I've ever paid for water rates has been to Thames Water. It used to be, and I'm talking like 50, 20 years ago, to be fair, very, very minimal. Very, very minimal. Now, it's not minimal. It's not a giant amount compared to electricity and gas, but it's significant now. We'll up it by a third again over the next few years, and then after 2030, even more. It's just going to keep ticking up more and more and more, and the quality of service you get, it goes down and down and down. This is a crumbling civilization, isn't it? We need real men in leadership to force things to turn around. We don't need people like No Stern and Burnham or Keir Starmer. Nothing men, weak men, not prepared to really act. We look how governments used to behave. I'm talking about before the war, World War II. The governments straight after the war, Attlee, Churchill, Eden, Macmillan, even Harold Wilson, to some extent Ted Heath. They used to make big moves. If there was something like this going on, they would make big moves. They would bring in, like, as I say, a raft of legislation, a whole raft of acts of Parliament to change the situation, try and fix it. They would bring in draconian measures, what today we would probably consider, what the corporate lamestream media, the soy boy media, would consider draconian, like beyond the pale, like overreach, government overreach. They just acted in the interest of the country, very often, doing big things. Now, again, we've just got governments that slightly adjust the deck chairs a bit on a sinking ship. So it's the best we've got, isn't it? We need real leaders. Not afraid of the media, of what the next day's headline is going to be. The Daily Express, okay, it's a good paper. You can read your Express now. Look, they've gone with those fires and that train derailment. You're telling me there's not a cabal of the senior editors or owners? Of course there is. Hey, guys. Don't talk about David Lammy's finances. Don't talk about who George Osborne is friends with. Yeah? Don't talk about Andy Burnham's past in any real detail. Don't talk about any of that. Just talk about that a train was derailed and that there was a fire. Definitely don't talk about Epstein's connections to Ehud Barak. Okay, furious 13 water companies allowed to raise bills again despite poor performance. Don't hand out rewards for their failure, yeah. Fair enough, isn't it? Something about Nicole Kidman again, don't care. The FT, the Financial Times, Harvey Nichols has been bought by someone else, don't care. Anthropic investors bet on record $2 trillion IPO valuation. Autumn listing planned for startup, Anthropic. Appetite for AI boom to be tested. The Anthropic is going to float its IPO in a few months, in the autumn, whenever that is. It might be valued at $2 trillion. Surely that's overvalued. Surely that's overvalued. I mean, I think SpaceX was a bit. I was talking all about SpaceX, wasn't I, before? And I was saying it's a steal. It's a good buy. And don't worry, it will dip after all the initial hype. It floats. It goes up a bit because everyone wants some and buys it because of the hype. Then it dips massively, but then it sort of starts climbing back up and it starts its real value. I stand by all that take that SpaceX was a good buy. Anthropic, that seems sort of even more wildly overpriced. But who knows, right? Maybe companies like Anthropic really are the future. They'll end up dominating one way or another, even by proxy, loads of other industries. They end up dominating the world in a sense. And to have the tiniest slither of stock in them is just liquid gold. Who knows? Who knows? If I was going to buy Anthropic, which I'm not going to, I've got no intention of doing so, I would at least wait for the first little spike and then the drop off. And if you're going to buy, probably by then, but who knows? Could be an all-time dud. Who knows? Could be a dog. Don't know. All right. What have we got? Okay, they're the papers. They're the increasingly absurd and infuriating front pages. All right, should we have a look at our poll before we get into Nigel Clacton? We did a poll today. Jack, if you bring that up for me. 1 second, people. Oh, there we go. Here it is. Okay. We asked you guys, do you think, just shy of 1,000, or over 900 votes, do you think Nigel Farage will have to face another by-election in Clacton after this one, meaning? We gave you the options of yes, no, and maybe. The ayes have it. 47% of you say yes. And the rest of you are quite split between no and maybe. 27% say maybe, and 26% say no. Okay. If I was taking that poll, I would click yes. Of course, we just don't know what that standards commissioner will, what conclusion he'll come to. And then if and when, I think when, he passes it to like the standards committee, what they will decide. Who knows? It's entirely up to them. The answer to that question is in their hands. Who knows what they'll decide? But it's only a poll. We're just asking you. If I was taking that poll, I would have clicked yes. So 47% of you, the eyes have it. All right, then, shall we get into the main event? The main event. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. Right. Nige had his by-election, won it handily. Of course he did. A couple of things to note, though, I think. There's the stage there with most of the candidates. Look, there's Kai. Kai Stevens there, look. Where's Loza? Lawrence Fox. I'm not seeing him in that particular image. Anyway, there's Binface, of course. Can't miss the good count. Nigel's not there, though. Nigel's not there. He didn't turn up to his own count. We'll talk about that in a moment. A couple of data points on that. But just the result, first of all. So Nigel won. Everyone knew he would win. Of course he was going to win. It's just by what margin, really. Even that isn't, like, vastly important. I'm sure they showed the... Here we go. All right. So first thing I'll say, turnout, 44.4%. Lame. I mean, by-elections are usually lower than a general election, but 44.4%. It's not really galvanising people, really, is it? More than half the people are just not bothered who their MP is. Quick word about turnout. participation. Read a whole book and bits of other books about political participation when I was doing my postgrad in government policy and politics, and wrote an essay all about participation. That's what actual political scientists call it. Turnout. It's actually vital in a democracy. Absolutely vital. When you see that turnout, like at the mayoral election, Manchester mayoral election, which is a bit different, because that was super low, like 25%. Quite often in general elections, we get like 50%, 55%, 60%, something like that. It's really bad. That speaks to me. That the data points we get about turnout. It's not just like, oh, like, who cares? No, it really matters. It's of absolute fundamental importance. If nothing else, it speaks of like a malaise in our society. It speaks of a deep-seated, very, very deep-seated, deep-rooted disaffection, a cynicism, a real deep cynicism. People feel so disenfranchised, so ignored, that they won't even bother to turn out. Right? It's quite easy to vote. There'll probably be a polling station relatively near you, and you go in there, and the actual act itself, once you've got there, the actual act itself takes like 1 minute. 3 minutes at most. It's the only real inconvenience is getting to the polling station, and there's usually loads of them, unless you live in a really, really rural area. If you live in any town or city, it will be almost certainly within walking distance, and it takes you like 2 minutes, 3 minutes to do it. And people won't even do that, not even interested in that. They've just turned their back on it. Turned their back on the whole process. That's a deep, deep, deep worry and concern for me. Real deep. Talk about that in a lot more detail, but I won't. It's already gone 5:30, but okay. I also got up a web page showing the results in Clacton for the last general election 2024. Let's have a quick look at that, shall we? Here we go. First of all, let's have a look at the turnout on it. So the turnout then was 58.4%. I mean, by-elections are usually lower than a general election, but still. Nearly 60% turned up then. This time, 44. I mean, it is like most people, even the people of Clacton, know this was all a bit of a charade, a little bit of just a political gambit by Nigel, a little bit of theatre. He was always going to win it. It's not a real proper by-election in that sense, in that limited sense. It is a real by-election, of course, but, you know. The other party is deciding to boycott it effectively. Nige versus Binface. You can imagine the average voter in Clacton just like, what is this? I'm not even going to bother turning out to vote for that. All right. So last night, Nigel got 63.3% of the vote. A bit lower than a lot of the exit polls or a lot of the polls I saw, saying he was likely to get more like 70, 75. Two or three polls I saw put him on like 72, 73%. So slightly underperformed on that. However, this whole by-election is a bit of a farce, isn't it? A little bit. I'm loath to agree with Labour and Lib Dems and all those, but, it is a bit. So he got slightly more votes overall. I think he got like about 22,000 votes this time. Last time he got like 21,000. Yeah, this is from the 2024 election. So he got slightly more. Got an increased percentage. Binface got... he outperformed Labour last time. I can't remember, but Binface got, I think, 9,000 odd votes. 10,000 odd votes. So he beat Labour's offering last time. He got about the same percentage share as the Conservatives. Well, look, last time the Conservatives got 27.9. This time Binface got, 26.9. So Binface in the same ballpark as the Conservatives. But again, oh, look, Lawrence Fox, he got 1%. Give it up, mate. People don't want you. They're not interested in you. You're not a leader of men, are you? You're a theatre kid. You're a Nepo baby theatre kid, mate. Give it a rest. And an obnoxious sieve gnat to boot. All right, anyway. Nigel didn't turn up, though. Now, why is that? It's very, 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 very rare for someone to not turn up. Well, for the winner of an election, parliamentary election, not to turn up. An interesting, interesting data point. I saw someone say on the news this morning on the TV, on the Real TV. The last time a winner of a parliamentary election didn't turn up was Bobby Sands in the early 80s. Ever heard of Bobby Sands? An IRA terrorist who was in prison. He was running for election in prison. Won, remarkably. Perhaps not remarkably. Won, and obviously couldn't turn up to the vote because he was in prison. That was the last time that happened. So it's very rare. Sometimes, if someone doesn't win, they're expected to win, and they find out they're not going to win, then they throw their toys out of the pram and don't bother turning up. George Galloway did that the other year. He wanted to win. He was clear he wasn't going to, from early indications, so he just went home. Like a petulant bitch. George Galloway. Oh, I despise George Galloway. Ugh. What a wrong'un. His entire world view is wrong. Anyway, George Galloway. Nigel didn't turn up. Now, Nigel said it was because of threats. Well, reform men, Nigel said. It was because of threats. They had credible threats. So, okay, if that's true, fine. Good, yeah. I don't want Nigel to be hurt. Not a hair on his head. And I really mean that. His person should be inviolate. Said that a number of times, haven't I? Like a tribune of the people in ancient Rome. Absolutely sacrosanct his person. So he said there's threats. But then Essex police said, there's no threats. There's been no threats that we know of. So, has, like, reform got better intelligence than the police? I mean, that's not inconceivable. I doubt it. But it's not inconceivable. It's not inconceivable, is it? What's more likely, though, isn't it? It's a bit more likely. Is that Nigel didn't want to stand there and be in this picture. The optics of it. He didn't want to have to stand next to Binface and Loza and Kai. Because there would then be a photo of that for all time. And make him look a bit silly. There'd be photos of him sort of standing face to face more or less with Binface. Maybe even sort of forced to shake hands with Binface. Nigel'd have to put a brave face on it and pretend it's funny. Laugh his head off. That's not ideal optics. He's trying to be super serious, isn't he? Nigel's super serial as an MP and a politician. Isn't that more likely? If reform said, Nigel hasn't turned up because of a credible threat, and the police say anything, even remotely, like, yeah, like there's an outside possibility that maybe that's a real thing, that's true, then fine. But the police have just said no. So if the police are telling the truth, they might not be, but on this instance, in this, why wouldn't they be? Anyway, if that's true, then it's almost certainly Nigel just didn't want to stand there. Who's treating the people of Clacton with contempt now? Won't even turn up because of the optics of standing near Binface. And of course, Nigel making the argument and Reform making the argument that this was a win for the establishment, a win for him against the establishment. Yeah, it was Nigel versus the establishment and he's come out on top. Is it? This is the establishment, is it? I mean, there's the argument. Let's get into that a little bit. There's the argument that Binface sort of is the establishment. Okay, to a degree, I accept that because the real guy, I can't remember his Christian name, it's Harvey, something Harvey, innit? He is sort of, in a sense, in a real sense, sort of, the establishment. Like, he's been a writer or a runner or to do with the writing of various BBC comedy things, isn't he? Wasn't he on, write for Have I Got News For You and various things like that? Stuff like that. So in that sense, he's sort of, he is an establishment BBC type containment globalist lefty, leftoid douchebag, really. The real man behind the bin. So in that sense, you can make a legit argument that Binface, on some level, is the establishment. But that's it. That's as far as that goes, though. So I not that far. Like if Reform are making, and Nigel are making the argument, it was him versus the establishment and he won. So, okay, I'll give you 5% of that being a credible, decent, solid argument. It's not 0%. It's not complete fiction and nonsense, but I'll give you 5%. I.e. 95%, nah, I'm not buying that, nah. Binface is ultimately, despite the man behind the bin, is ultimately a novelty candidate, isn't it? A joke, ultimately. And all the other candidates were never realistic, were they? Poor Kai, good for standing there and doing it though, mate. Kai Stevens, well done. Well done for giving it a go. It does take a bit of balls to do that, even when you know you're going to be a paper candidate. You know you'll probably lose your deposit. You have to go through the whole thing anyway. You have to get up and stand there. And you go through the spotlight of it all. That takes a bit of guts. Most people haven't got the guts to do that with your real name, your real face, the whole nine yards. Front and centre, chest out, chin up. That takes a bit of guts, so well done. Well done. Nonetheless, this is not the establishment, really. It really, really isn't. Because that's what Nigel wanted, wasn't it? He wanted to call this election, and all the big parties would stand. Then he'd beat them, which he probably would, probably will. If there's another by-election, I had to put a tenner on it. I'd put Nigel to win it again, probably. I would, yeah. Then you could make the argument. I'd flip it round. I'd say it's 95% that, yeah, the argument that you've beaten, taken on the establishment and won. Yeah, fine, good. That makes sense. This doesn't make sense. This doesn't make sense. You're not really beating the establishment. But yeah, he's come out and he said that, making that argument, the argument he would have made anyway, even if the Tories and Labour and everyone stood against him. Falling a bit flat. That argument falls a bit flat. It doesn't really, like a deflated whoopee cushion, mate. Doesn't ring true. It rings hollow. And here we go, straight away. The very morning of Nigel's victory, BBC go with, Farage's by-election victory won't stop questions about finances. Yeah. If that was the purpose of it, that was the strategy, that was the gambit, of course that was never going to work. That's one of the things Binface said. How do the strategists and Nigel not know that wouldn't work? Straight away, just straight back into it. Straight back into the frying pan. Nigel's £5 million. Yeah, Christopher Harborne. Yeah, Posh George, the convicted fraudster, and on and on and on. Dicey. Richard Ticey is embroiled in it all as well. Nothing stops. Nothing is over. Should we hear from... There's a couple of videos here I thought were interesting. Wasn't it on... Sorry, I thought it was on the Mail. They had a couple of videos. Oh, no, sorry. It's Sky. Should we hear from... Should we hear from Nige and Binface? Should we hear from them? Let them speak for themselves. Here we go. Let's listen to Nigel. And again, this was somewhere else. This was like a Reform HQ somewhere. I don't think it was. It certainly wasn't at the count.
33 years ago. It is now 33 years since I first stood in a parliamentary by-election. That was Eastleigh, back in 1994. They're a funny old lot from Hampshire, aren't they? And over the intervening years, I've stood in many elections, general elections, European elections, and now a second by-election. And every time, I've really enjoyed going to the count. It's exciting. It's dramatic. It's, you know, you're on the stage. It's something to be at. And I'm sad to say that after 33 years of being a candidate in active politics, I've been advised tonight by Essex Police that there is an organised campaign to disrupt and degrade the result that will take place in a few hours' time.
But he said there wasn't.
And once again, it shows you the sheer intolerance, the sheer loss of fundamental democratic principles.
Well, that's true.
That those that went before us fought in world wars to fight for and preserve. And this shows you why the battle that we're engaged upon in this, in this great party, in this great movement of ours, is to get this country back to the values that it needs to be. And so I regret to say, and by the way, I'm not scared of these people, far from it, but I'm damned if I'm going to stand on a stage, having won a resounding victory, a ringing endorsement of all that I've tried to fight for and you try to fight for, and be demeaned and humiliated by nobodies. And I will not, sadly, be attending the count, which means... which means... I'm going to be here all night!
Yay. Well, I mean, there you go. What can you say? The police said there wasn't any threats, but it may well have been, you know, it might not have been like a full-blown sort of death threats or bomb threats or whatever, but it might have just been they knew that people were going to turn up with milkshakes. It might have just been something like that. Or just people that were just like, play super loud white noise over Nigel's acceptance speech or something. I don't know. Like, who knows? Who knows? Maybe the police are wrong, or the reporting I've seen this morning that the police said that, that's wrong. And in fact, what Nigel said there is absolutely correct. I'm not ruling that out. Let's hear from Binface, though. The runner-up.
You mentioned Makerfield. I got 0.2% in that election. And let's just say, speculate that I managed to keep my deposit, which would be a nice start, 5%. I make that a 2,500% swing to Binface in 2 months. I think that's the greatest swing in British political history, but you probably know better than me.
I'm not sure about that.
You just said at the beginning of this interview that Nigel Farage is claiming victory, but...
he is.
Well, in that case, it's going to be a two-legged match, like the Carabao Cup or the Cold War, because we're going to be back again in a few weeks, aren't we? Hold on to your popcorn, everyone, because they're the second leg in Clacton, which I prophesied. I said to the people of Clacton, vote Binface, and you would save approximately 350 grand on a second by-election. So I reckon...
Not wrong.
How about this? He said Reform would pay for the second one. Maybe Nigel could pay for it out of his 5 million. That'd be nice.
Mr. Farage has said this week that if there was a second by-election, that would be silly. And tonight he said it would be stupid. What do you think about that?
Sure, well, I'm glad he's not saying that this by-election's silly, which of course it isn't. It's a very fair and positive campaign between two rival candidates to rule the country.
What do you think about the fact that he's got this inquiry by the Standards Commissioner and then the Standards Committee?
Well, the thing which makes me curious, and I'm interested to get a journalist's view on this, is that there was a report in one of the papers, I believe, a speculation, that the Reform UK strategists believed that by calling this by-election preemptively, it would avert the need for a by-election after the result of the Parliamentary Standards Committee. Now, I'm a space warrior from Sigma 9 with a fixation for CFAX and Lovejoy. But even I knew...
Lovejoy, that's going back a bit.
Exactly. But even I knew...
Dennis McShane.
Lovely.
No, not Dennis McShane. He was the MP, wasn't he?
Ian McShane.
Ian McShane.
Come on, John.
Ian McShane.
It's actually a university challenge. But you know what I'm saying is that even if I knew that wouldn't work, how would a putative government in waiting not know how Parliament works? I find that fascinating. One vote is beautiful. I would take that, you know?
That's enough one from human Binface. He is a bit of a dick, isn't he? The real guy behind the thing, behind the bin. So, all right. But that was a fair point, wasn't it? If the strategy from Reform was to put all the scandal to bed, it's just not gonna... it's not a thing, it doesn't work. So... But Nigel thinks the next by-election, should there be one, that will be stupid and silly. Not this one. the next one. That would be stupid and silly. Right? Not this. Okay, well, okay. This isn't stupid and silly, no? Where Nigel's not even there. Okay, all right, well, okay. It's already 10-2, so that's the main story. Nigel is back in Parliament, but all the questions around finances, whether they're legit or not, whether it's a giant stitch-up, which it may well be, I don't know. All of that will just start again now. He just bought himself a month of extra time. That's all this really was. Buying himself a month of extra time. Unless the Standards Committee, Commissioner and Committee conclude that Reform have done absolutely nothing wrong. But I feel like, because I don't know one way or another. I've said that a number of times, right? So let's make that perfectly clear. That's why I'm sort of sit on the fence. That's why I'm prepared to give the benefit of the doubt until the conclusion. But it feels like a lot of people in the know, in the actual Westminster bubble, it feels like a lot of those people, if not the vast majority of them, they know that the Standards Commission will come back and say Reform have done something wrong and Nigel has broken the rules. We shall see. All right, then. Let's have a look at On This Day in History. You guys seem to like that bit. I enjoy doing that bit. Down through the centuries, nay, millennia, on this day, the 14th of August. What happened of note? Let's have a look. What have we got? Okay. In the year 1281, during Kublai Khan's, that's Genghis Khan's, one of Genghis Khan's many grandchildren, when Kublai Khan's second Mongol invasion of Japan, his invading Chinese fleet, well, Mongolian Chinese fleet, of 3,500 vessels, disappeared in a typhoon near the Japanese coast. Yeah, say disappeared. The Japanese kamikazed it into oblivion. The late 13th century Japanese flew their Zeros nose first straight into the Mongolian fleet and blew it out of the water. Kamikaze. No, of course they didn't. It was kamikaze, but it wasn't aeroplanes. Kamikaze means, what does it mean? Like a furious wind or something like that, doesn't it? Something like that. Anyway. In fact, Harry, can you Google the exact translation of kamikaze for me? In fact, probably someone in the chat's already saying it, probably immediately. It's like a furious winds or winds of fury or something like that, isn't it? Probably translate it more than one way, but... oh, is it a divine wind? Sorry, that or spirit wind. Divine wind or spirit wind. Okay, all right. Okay, all right, yeah. Because there was a big storm. There was a big storm. It rises like a storm. And it took out Kublai Khan's invasion fleet, largely. A kamikaze, an actual storm. Okay. So the Mongols never did invade Japan properly. I mean, they tried. They landed a bit, but it was not successful. Could have been if it wasn't for that big storm that one time in 1281. Okay. All right. Because Kublai Khan wasn't happy with the Japanese trading with the Southern Song, his Chinese enemies. There's a lot to it. If you're interested in that in great detail, I still haven't done an epochs on it yet, or series of epochs on the Mongols. I've been threatening to for 5 years, just haven't done it. If you want to know, Fall of Civilizations podcast, that's what it's called. Fall of Civilizations podcast. They're free on YouTube, unabridged. You want a fair few hours of that. Or Dan Carlin has also got a very long series, hours and hours and hours and hours worth on the Mongols. Both of those are excellent. It's worth knowing about the Mongols. Brilliant stories in and of themselves and world-changing. Absolutely world-changing. Okay, let's move on. On this day, in 1842, US Army Colonel Worth declares the Second Seminole War over after nearly 7 years. Over 3,000 surviving members of the Seminole Nation are forcibly relocated from Florida to Oklahoma, with only about 300 permitted to remain. Yeah, they're in, Florida, yeah. My ancestor, so I've got American ancestors, haven't I? Of European descent, of course. My DNA shows I'm sort of British, almost entirely British, over 90%, 90% odd British. Entirely Northwest European. Well, with the possible exception of a tiny bit, maybe of tiny, like 1.8% or something of Basque. Well, actually, my results for ancestry and living DNA were slightly different. Might have a tiny, tiny amount of, what was it, Mohawk in there. That would have come from my father's side, if it's real. If it's not just noise in the DNA. Tom Rosell, Survivor the Drive, says anything as low as 1%, 2% might just be noise and it might not really be there. But anyway, one of my American ancestors, Francis Langhorne Dade, Major Francis Langhorne Dade, he fought in the First Seminole War, I believe. Got himself and all his men killed. Anyway, by the sort of mid-19th century, Native American Indian peoples can't put up any real proper fight against the US Army and Cavalry. Like, once in a blue moon, they might get a win, like the Battle of Little Bighorn or something, but ultimately, on the grand stage, tactically, can't, strategically, it's no contest. All right. On this day in 1945, it's VJ Day, Victory in Japan Day, the end, the final end of World War II. There you go. And there's a returning sailor kissing a young lady, perhaps against her will. She doesn't look particularly into it, does she? But anyway, let's not speculate on that. We won the war. The Allies finally won the war. Nuked Japan into oblivion. All right. VJ Day, the Empire of Japan surrenders unconditionally to Allies. You sure about that? Was it unconditional? It wasn't unconditional, wasn't it? Hirohito got to remain emperor, didn't he? Yeah. They say that, though, don't they? That's history for you. There's certain tropes, certain things people say, like the accepted armchair version of history. You just scratch the surface and it's wrong. We talked about it yesterday, didn't we? Or on Monday, on Wednesday or something? But that's the classic thing. America insisted on the Allies insisted on unconditional surrender. And we did. We won an unconditional surrender. Yeah, but we wasn't, though, was it? Not that it really matters, ultimately, in the scheme of things. Hirohito got to remain emperor of Japan. That was one of the lines in the sand that Roosevelt and Churchill and then Truman had. It's like, no, you don't get to be emperor anymore. That's our conditions are that, and we insist on an unconditional surrender. And in the end, even after they'd nuked them and firebombed Tokyo into cinders, the Japanese were still like, no, we insist on, if nothing else, and it really was nothing else, if nothing else, Hirohito gets to remain emperor of the Japanese. And in the end, Truman's like, okay, all right. Okay, let's just put an end to this, please. Can we? Okay. Your little old emperor dude gets to still remain nominally the emperor. Okay. We'll make MacArthur and the US the actual rulers of Japan for an interim period. But okay, nominally, your emperor can still be emperor. All right. Can we end this now? It's not unconditional. Don't say it's unconditional. It wasn't unconditional. The Japanese had a condition and the Americans accepted it. Maybe it's a tiny point of history. But there you go. People lie about it to this day. I mean, lies, that's a bit strong. It's just incorrect, isn't it? Japan surrenders unconditionally to Allies. No, it wasn't. Ending World War II, in Japan, it was actually the 15th of August because of the time zones. All right. What else have we got? On this day, 1947, Pakistan gains independence from the United Kingdom. Yeah, Jinnah, isn't it? Muhammad Ali Jinnah insisted that the Muslims need their own land, their own country. Because we're giving up India, the British Raj... The British-controlled India would be given back to the native people so they can have home rule and be completely independent and rule themselves. Okay. Well and good. The millstone around our neck and had been the whole time, really. But then the Muslims and the Hindus are like immediately like, we probably can't live together really properly in any sort of actual peace. Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, and a lot of the Hindus and the Indian nationalist types said, no, let's all stay together as one big country. And the Muslims, largely under Muhammad Ali Jinnah, say, no, we insist we have our own country. East and West Pakistan. East Pakistan becomes Bangladesh, eventually, later. But, okay. And then partition. And the Hindus and Muslims just start butchering each other wholesale. Oh, okay. So British rule had been preventing that all along. The second we leave, they revert to that. Oh, okay. Well done. They showed their true colours. I see your true colours shining through. Okay, on this day, 1969, British Army deploys on the streets of Northern Ireland, beginning Operation Banner. Just evil Brits, just evil Englishmen, just want to invade Ireland, Northern Ireland, for no reason, just because they love, like, shooting up Irish people. There's no reason for it, other than just being evil Brits. Or was it to try and protect Protestants from Catholic terrorism, essentially? Ooh, might get in a bit of trouble for that one. Shame it's the truth. On this day in 1980, 17,000 workers strike at the Lenin shipyard in Gdansk, Poland, beginning the Solidarity Movement. Interesting. It's a long time before the final, well, 10, 11 years before the final collapse of the Soviet project. But Poland were the first. I'm pretty sure they were the first to break away. As soon as Gorbachev said the satellite peoples and would-be nations of the Soviet bloc, if you want to have an independence, vote for yourself. We'll allow it. Poland's like, yes, we'll take that, yes. And we vote overwhelmingly for it. Thank you. Poland. Good on them. Good on them. All right. Let's have a look at our Rumble Rants and Super Chats. I'd like to do the Rumble Rants first. Do you think Global Church History will be in at number one? Is it going to be a good day? What have we got? No, he's not. I thought he was. Is he first in on the... He's not first in on the... Oh, he is first in. Sorry. He was first... Oh. Sorry, I'll have to explain slightly. Because Jack, it's not Little Harry, it's Jack today. He's done it ever so slightly differently. And it confused me. Usually I have my Rumble Rants on the left-hand side. And the YouTube on the right-hand side. And without actually looking at what I'm looking at, I've assumed he's done it the same as usual, but he's flipped him over. So... the tiniest difference completely bamboozled me. All right, let's have a look at our Rumble Rants that are on the right-hand side of my screen this morning. And Global Church History is in at number one. Good, fine. Whew. Phew, everything's all right. There's balance in the universe again. Global Church History in at number one. And still, reigning, defending. Mr. Global Church History, Christian name Global, middle name Church, surname History, says, today in 70 BC... Hortense abandons Verres as Cicero's case against him was too strong. We talked about that before. I think Global Church History likes that story of Cicero. It definitely came up before, didn't it? So 70 AD, it's after the age of Sulla. Sulla dies in like 78 AD or something. And we're counting down when it's BC, so that 70 AD is after 78 AD. One of those great set-piece cases where Cicero, the great orator, the great statesman and barrister, the equivalent of a barrister, lawyer, argues in court that a particularly corrupt governor, Verres, was protected from up on high, was in fact guilty of all sorts of crimes and misdemeanors, what today we'd probably call like embezzlement or whatever. Good, yeah, Cicero. Do you think I've got long-form content all about the life and career and adventures of Marcus Tullius Cicero, Tully, to his friends? Think that's there? Oh yeah, it's there. Is there on my history themed show Bodade's Epochs behind the paywall? Do consider going over to loadseaters.com and signing up to become a member for as little as £5 a month, bronze tier membership. That £5, you will get not just hundreds of hours, literally and without exaggeration, hundreds of hours of yours truly talking about history. You get loads of other stuff. Loads of other stuff. Luke has got a very great series all about more literary analysis, chronicles, right? Firaz Modad, that Firaz fella. Yeah, he's got loads of stuff on geopolitics. Dan Tubb, you know Dan Tubb? Big Danny Tubb. Big Danny T. He's got one on economics. Loads of hours and hours and hours and hours of this stuff. There's the old Josh Firm's old The Firminator. His old series he had on contemplators called Contemplations about a plethora of different things. That's all there. And on and on, there's loads more. as well. £5 a month. For more content than you can get through, really. If nothing else, the best one is blatantly my one. I'll say that, I've said it. The best one. The best paywalled content is clearly my history stuff. I'm up to episode 280-odd, 278 or something. Each one long form, over an hour. Occasionally they're under an hour, but very often not more than an hour, hour and a half. Some of them knocking closer to 2 hours. 270 plus of those. Hundreds of hours. Everything from Göbekli Tepe to the 1980 Iranian embassy siege. Loads of ancient stuff, medieval stuff. Quite a lot on World War One. It's all there. £5 a month. All right. Enough shilling. Global Church History's second factoid of the morning is, what have we got? You say, on this day in 1040 AD, Macbeth killed King Duncan at Pitgavany. Well, Macbeth was a real historical figure. That's true, you know. But the events and the dialogue and various things in Shakespeare's play, Macbeth, are just, it's just Shakespeare. It's just Shakespeare's fancy. But nonetheless, Macbeth was a real historical figure. Bit like that Mel Gibson film with Braveheart. You know, like William Wallace was a real person. And he did get eventually caught and executed by the English. But most of the details of that film and the Macbeth play by Shakespeare is not, it's not real. It's a screenwriter's fancy. Nonetheless, interesting though, Macbeth was real. Okay. The next three are all Geoffrey Farnall. I think they're connected at a glance, so I'll just read them all in one go. You've put a little contextual factoid. Oh, I like factoids. You've put, after the Battle of Omdurman, oh, I know a lot about this. I wonder where you're going with this. Let's see where he's going with this. After the Battle of Omdurman, Kitchener, General Kitchener, the English British commander, Kitchener was widely criticised, including by Queen Victoria, for ordering the killing of the wounded. However, if you read Gordon's journal, Gordon of Khartoum, Gordon of China, do you think I've got content all about that? During the earlier siege, which Kitchener will surely have done, as he was part of the relief expedition, Gordon, explicitly advises in favour of this because the wounded Mahdists will attack anyone who tries to help them. Doesn't it show how something which at first seems needlessly brutal is actually understandable with a bit of context? Yeah. Quite often, yeah. Like Richard I's slaughter of a load of captives. So when you look at the detail of it, I mean, it is super brutal, but he didn't have much choice. It was sort of de rigueur for the day, and he didn't have much choice. But okay. The Battle of Omdurman. Love it. That's the reconquest of the Sudan. Churchill was there, a young Churchill, young man in the Lancers, even rid down a couple of Sudanese Mahdists with his lance and killed them. He was really happy about it, really proud of it. Yeah, he wrote a great book about it, called The River War. I'm not a big fan of Churchill, the politician, the 1930s, 40s era politician, but as a writer, his prose is very, very, very good. Very good. River, I'm pretty sure it's on audiobook unabridged on YouTube. Check it out. It's worth your time. The story is there was Mahdists, Islamic fundamentalist rebels in Sudan, or the bit of land we now call the Sudan, pushing up into Egypt, causing all sorts of problems for Egypt. The British kind of controlled in a de facto sense Egypt. It's not like we had a viceroy of Egypt exactly, but the Khedive of Egypt, the leader of Egypt, was sort of did as he was told by the British, essentially, more or less. We're talking the late 19th century here as well. Like Omdurman, the Battle of Omdurman is like 1898. And the Egyptians just kept saying to us, help us, we've got this giant rebellion on our southern borders, help us. And the British, are like Gladstone and stuff, were like, no, like, we've already got far too many colonial commitments. We're already insanely thinly stretched all around the whole world. Like, no, it's your problem. Deal with it. Like, you keep moaning about how we've got too much influence over you already. But now you want us to fight your war for you as well. Like, no. And they just, it got worse and worse and worse. And they kept insisting, help us. send an army over here, a relief force, an expedition force, to come and save us. We can't save ourselves. We need you to. And in the end, the British were like, really reluctantly, like, okay, all right. Okay, we'll send an expedition force to do a reconquest of the Sudan on your behalf, nominally. Okay. So we did. We sent over that with General Gordon, Gordon of China, to become Gordon of Khartoum. And it failed, and he got himself killed. General Gordon. And then that made the British public annoyed, you see. We were annoyed at that point. How dare they kill one of our great men, one of our great statesmen, like a well-known household name? Well, he just got murdered by the Sudanese. We can't have that. Good God. So we sent over a bigger army and did then completely do a reconquest of the Sudan, wiped out the Mahdists and their Mahdi, and did a quick siege on Omdurman, their capital, the city of Omdurman, and beat them. Because we had gunboats and rifles and machine guns, and they had, like, spears and bows and arrows. Here you go, the reconquest of the Sudan. Back in 98, I think it was. Was it? Well, it was then I was awarded the Victoria Cross. For bravery above and beyond the call of duty. Those were the days. Discipline, you see. Discipline was the thing. Why, it builds character and all that, what don't you know? And esprit de corps. Anyway, it's enough of that. I could talk all about Battle of Omdurman. Cousin Bertie called a blighty one an Omdurman, actually. Called a spear right in the leg. One of the bloody fuzzy wuzzies. Almost ripped the damn thing off. Frightful injury it was. Frightful. Okay. Let's move on. Fallen Firebird says, Binface is absolutely 100% a libtard lefty establishment weapon. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree. I understand. Yeah, all right. You're not wrong. That's not wrong. He would never stand like this against a true leftist. Well, I don't know about that. His job isn't to win, it's to make a fuss. Well, that's true. So that's true, though. Absolutely. Farage is still an enemy, though. Yeah, that's also true. The only thing you've said there, which I won't completely 100% agree with, is that Binface would never stand like this against a true leftist. So I think he would. Wherever there's going to be some sort of by-election or election where there's going to be loads of cameras there and the papers might write about it, he will go there. But anyway, I still understand what you're saying and everything else you've said there. 100%. Yeah. Chango98 says, Lotus Eaters tribute act when? Oh, and then you've got the musical note emoji sign thing. The first picture of you, the first picture of summer. I feel like they're quote. That's like you're quoting from a real life song, but I don't know. Those lyrics don't ring a bell to me. Lotus Eaters tribute act when? The first picture of you, the first picture of summer. All I can think of is Pictures of You by The Cure. I love that song. But those are not the lyrics of it. So if they're lyrics to another song, sorry, I don't know it. I'm not ringing a bell. It's not ringing a bell with me. Thanks for the super chat anyway. All right. Dragon Lady Chris says, I got the Bobby Sands cookbook. It's really to die for. Ooh, that's in bad taste. Ooh, Dragon Lady Chris, I probably should have read that first before I read it out. Ooh, it's quite funny though. Bobby Sands mentioned earlier, the IRA, you know, cooking up bombs. It's to die for. Ooh. Okay, I've said it now. It's happened now. It's live. It's live on the internet. What are you going to do? All right. PigDog5150 says, read the leaky water. A rough estimate is to irrigate a wheat field, you need about 400,000 to 600,000 litres per acre. Is that right? You're a farmer. You should know. Is that right? That sounds like a lot to me. I wouldn't have thought it was anywhere near that. I'm sure you're right, though. I'm not questioning you. Gives an idea of what could be done with that wasted water. Yeah. Is it that much? 400,000 to 600,000 litres per acre. Per acre. Is that for a whole summer, or is that... It's not for, like, one day, is it? Is that for, like, a whole season? Still, even if it's for the whole season, basically half a million litres. Okay. Well, did not know it was that much. All right, moving on. Matthew C., how are you, sir? It's a joy to meet you at the live event the other day, the other week. You say... Farage and Binface, two faces of the establishment presenting themselves as outsiders. Yes. Yes. Right, yeah. Two people claiming to be outside of the establishment norm containment machine, when in fact they're both integral cogs to it. Yeah. I think you're quite right there. Yeah, good take. I agree with you. Okay, last one here. Last rumble rant from Pigdog 5150 says, Binface is a bad joke, and yet he mocks Farage. Shows how much of an even worse joke Farage has become. Yeah, reform overall in the polling do seem to be keep slipping. Slipping. Like Nigel Farage could only... Like a key data point there is Nigel Farage could only really get 44.8 or what was it? 44.4% of people in Clacton to bother turning out for him. It's not great. It doesn't suggest... A true ground swell support from the grassroots of just the everyday people genuinely sort of love him in any real way. If there is another by-election in Clacton, that will be very, very interesting. How that plays out, what the final numbers are. That will be very, very interesting. This is a bit of a, this really is silly, isn't it? A silly exercise. All right, let's look at our YouTube ones. Now I have to do this so I can see the left-hand side of my screen. The YouTube ones. Right, what we got? Stu Sutton, 1977, is in at number one. Very often is. Half the time or so is. So well done. And new. He wasn't first in yesterday, I don't think, so. And new. Stu says, anagram of Eamon Holmes, Omen Manholes. There you go. And then he just put in, and then after that, he just put in all capitals, just evil. All joking aside, get well soon, Ames. This is just a crazy in-joke based on a good faith error of mine once, months ago. Get well soon, buddy. Okay. Divine Sheep 3505 says, in 1972, I was born as a B-Day present for my mum. Oh, so it's your birthday today. Happy birthday. 1972. So what, you're 54? Is that right? Quick maths. 54? Happy 54th. If that's right, if my maths isn't off. Well done. Well done for making it that far. Well done for not being dead yet. No, sometimes how it feels though, isn't it, when you get middle-aged and you have a birthday? Like, yay. And what I'm really celebrating here is that I haven't died yet. That's the real celebration. I can imagine birthdays when you're really old, like your 95th birthday, say. It really is that at that point, isn't it? Like, oh, I've got one more. Will I get another? Genuinely, will I see another? All right, anyway, happy birthday. Tatum2733 says, you talk about man-made versus the natural change of Earth's temp. I ask, does it matter? If it's hotter, it's hotter. And that matters. Imagine times 10 migration. I think it does absolutely matter. Yeah, if that's the argument being made, it absolutely matters. I'm not sure quite if it's... Well, at the end, you put imagine times 10 migration. I'm not exactly sure the point you're making there. Sorry. Feels like a bit of a non sequitur, but I'm not trying to have a go at you, by the way. Thanks for the super chat, and you often do super chats. Appreciate it. But I think it does matter, yeah. I mean, ultimately, if it gets hotter, it gets hotter. You've got to deal with reality. Yeah, I mean, that's true. But yeah, if they're making the argument that it's man-made change to the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere, something like, what is it? Something between 400 and 470 parts per million, and maybe half of that is man-made in the last century or so. But see, if they're using the argument that that's why we can't burn fossil fuels, that's why they're going to put up tax on loads and loads of different things. That's why they're going to fundamentally change our way of life, our economies, our politics. on the strength of that argument, then yes, it matters. Absolutely, it matters, yeah. Does it matter to the overall temperature? Well, no, that's fair to say, but it matters, yeah. I would say, that's my feeling. All right. Jordan Godfrey doesn't say anything and just gives $1.99. Appreciate that. Thank you very much. Calzetti says, Corbyn said nationalised banks based in hindsight. No, it's not based. That's not based. That's not based. That's communism. It's a terrible idea. It's a terrible idea. Sorry. I don't know what you mean. Explain yourself, sir. How is that based? There's loads of different types of bank as well. It's not just your high street bank. There's all sorts of banks. Banks of international settlement. National banks. There's just investment banks. Asset management firms. There's not just your high street bank. There's a whole swathe of different types, different stripes of banking. If you nationalise them, you are then communist. You have a command economy then. That doesn't work. I don't know why you would say that was based. Maybe I'm profoundly misunderstanding what you're saying there, but that's just what you've said. Corbyn said nationalised banks, full stop, based in hindsight. End of super chat. Disagree. All right. Carmichael Cookie Dough Foot Job says, it is I, Thaddeus Bungo McTickpop, exclamation mark. I found another old rich babe, and she is the only female human I've met who's a huge Warhammer fan. I am conflicted. I must admit, I don't know. I'm not sure if I've ever met a female Warhammer fan. There's a few things in this world, aren't there, that are almost exclusively either a man thing or a woman thing, right? There are a few things like that. Warhammer's one of them. Right? Not many men are into sort of like needlework, like crochet. Some are. I'm not saying there's not one in the whole world, but not really. Like tricking out clothes to be more sparkly. Some gay men, perhaps, but most men, no. Formula One. It's very, very rare to find a woman that's into Formula One. Not that they don't exist. I mean, genuinely love it. Not that they don't exist, but they're rare. Warhammer. Once in a blue moon, you might go into a Games Workshop and there'll be a younger girl, like a 15-year-old or 17-year-old, that's there. It's probably for a boy. Like a lot of women that pretend they like football, it's for men, to be more engaging for men. It's a deliberate ploy, cynical even. Again, not that there aren't genuine female football fans, but Warhammer's one of those ones right at the end of that spectrum. There's no women like it. Really hardly any women have got any time for Warhammer on any level. But you found one, a posh one at that, according to you. And you say, I'm conflicted. Why do you not like Warhammer then? Because I know you've been saying you want a posh, rich babe. That's what, your words. But you found out she's into Warhammer and now you're conflicted. So you're not a Warhammer fan, I take it. Okay. MQSSS says, X-ranked, Elon wants to buy the UK. Thoughts? Well, we're not for sale and never shall be. England never shall be slaves. But if we were to be ruled by somebody else, whether it's the State Department or the Kremlin or just Elon, you could do worse, couldn't you? Could do worse than being ruled by Elon. He'd probably sort a few things out, wouldn't he? He'd almost certainly do a better job than no Sternum Burnham, wouldn't he? X rant. Are you saying you want me to do an X rant about it, or Elon Musk has already done an X rant about it? That's interesting. I wonder what you, or you're going to, or there's been more than one on there already. I don't know. You have to let me know. Okay. Carmichael Cookie Dough Foot Job again says, that's his name, by the way, Carmichael _ Cookie Dough _ Foot Job says, they are both mid fiddies. The women, I think he's talking about here. The posh babes are in their mid-50s, but he's written fiddies. They're in their mid-50s, and I will be 37. Oh, you're looking for a Mrs. Robinson type deal, are you? I see. I see. A surrogate mother figure, is it? Nothing wrong with that, by the way, if that's your bag. And you say, I am too old for... Am I too old for older women? Should I grow up and get a wife before it's too late, or just move up to grannies? I mean, dude, make your own decisions, right? I can't tell you what to do. If there's a rich, sort of good-looking, posh woman in her mid-50s, she probably wants a true toy boy, doesn't she? She probably wants a 22-year-old who's got an 8-pack, probably, doesn't she? But who knows? Beggars can't be choosers. Depends how good-looking you are, how much money you've got, how interesting or charismatic you are as well, doesn't it? Aren't all these factors? Whether you should get a wife of your own or just move up to grannies, I couldn't say, mate. It's up to you. You make your own life decisions. Probably try and get a normal, healthy relationship, though, if you can. It's probably the best. Get someone about your own age with all the same interests. That's probably the most ideal, the best advice I could give. Okay, well, pardon me. All right, how many more have we got? We've got another half a dozen or more, so let's see what we've got. James Lee Pevenhole says, MP safety killed. Wikipedia says, Spencer Percival was first. Well, he was a prime minister that was assassinated inside the Palace of Westminster in the 19th century. And you say, no. Spencer Percival was first. No. There was a Robert Parkington. Oh, yeah, I think you might have mentioned it. Someone mentioned it before, but it was probably you. Mentioned this before. That in 1536, i.e. right in the middle of Henry VIII, well, towards the end of Henry VIII, but in the middle of, like, the most important part of Henry VIII's reign. Do you think I've got long-form content talking about Henry VIII? Hours and hours and hours, many episodes talking about Henry VIII, yeah. 1536 is right in the middle of, like, his reformation and, like, the dissolution of the modern monasteries and all that, and that Robert Parkington in 1536 was killed with a gun. Benedict Lee, 11 times GGF married his daughter. Don't know what you're saying there. I'm going to move on. I've got to move on. Thomas Glover, 92, says, what are your favourite British institutions, Beau? Mine are National Trust and Wetherspoons. Both preserve our historic buildings. Well, I used to be a massive fan of the National Trust and English Heritage, and still am, I suppose. But they've gone woke, like everything else, they've gone woke. So they're among the best institutions, I would say. I would like to see them completely unwokeified. That would be great. Stop moaning about the transatlantic slave trade at every opportunity and never mentioning, hardly ever mentioning, the emancipation movement, the abolitionist movement. But yeah, the National Trust and English Heritage. Great, yeah. In both Britain, I would give them more resources, if anything. Yeah, try and make sure our crumbling buildings don't completely fall into dust. Okay. NPC BS3PM. I don't know what if that second word you want to be read as a word, but anyway, NPC. Just call you NPC, says, I wear suits. I'm wondering where do you buy yours? Oh, all over the place. I've basically collected suits over the years. Well, I've worked in London for years, for 18 odd years. You sort of collect suits one way or another. I bought them from all sorts of different places. What's this? I can't remember. Well, I've got some relatively cheap ones and got one or two very, very expensive tailored ones. Just... yeah, there's not like one place I go to buy them. Like the last one I bought was, I think, the Charles Hewitt. Is that what it's called? You'll probably know it's quite a well-known chain place, but Charles Thwaite or Charles Thwaite thing. You probably know what I'm talking about. That was the last one I bought. But just all over the place. All over the place. Okay. Emily Forrestore says, should still be the way we do warfare. None of this suicidal empathy balls. You put a bollocks. P.S. General Gordon is my daughter's direct ancestor. All right, so you're talking about that was in reference to the reconquest of the Sudan. Omdurman. That was Omdurman, actually. Yeah. Okay, you're saying your daughter's direct ancestor, so not yours, though. So what, through her father? Interesting. Interesting. Okay. James Lee Pevenhall says 9.2 billion litres per day flow of the River Severn. That puts it in perspective, doesn't it? 9.2 billion litres per day. So that's a lot more than 1.2, but still. It's like 1/8, 1/7 or whatever. Can't do the maths. Of the River Severn. If anyone doesn't know, that's a giant, giant river. A giant. Okay. Remarkable. Tatum2733 says, if it gets hotter, third world immigration balloons. Because they'll just feel more at home here. You live in sub-Saharan Africa and you wouldn't move here because it's all cold and rainy. Sleet and snow. But now it's not. Now it's really hot all the time. You're more likely to come here. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, I mean, God knows. Maybe. Okay. The last four now. We've got Caroline Taylor, 5594, says, hi, Bo. Love you guys from Australia. Oh, yeah? How good. Oh, mate. Go for your life. Oh, yeah. I've had some people say my Australian accent isn't too bad and some say it's laughably poor. I think it's funny. That's the main thing. Thank you. From Australia, all the way from down under. Thank you. Appreciate it, Caroline. You do. Thanks for joining us. Gross band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. Okay, Kiefer Brown, 1337, says, which Lotus Eaters is the best worst arm wrestler? Oh, I don't want to throw any shade at people, but... Oh... I don't want to say it. Is that probably Luca's not going to be the best? Why would I? I love the kid. He's a great guy. I love the kid. He's probably not. He's probably the worst. I would have thought. And I would imagine Big Harry is going to be the best one because he's the biggest and the strongest. Pretty sure. Yeah, I guess that's the answer straight up. Big Harry. He's like a giant. All right. And goes to the gym. He's a gym bro now. He didn't used to be. When he first started, he was just a normal dude. Might go to the gym occasionally. Now he goes to the gym all the time. He's like proper... He's actually proper hench. So, yeah. Him. All right. Sorry, Luca. Sorry if you watch this, if you hear about this. That's a tough question. Making me... I mean, it put me in a tough spot there. I should have just said Harry's the strongest one and left it at that, shouldn't I? Okay, all right. Field Marshal Dawn Browning Hoyt doesn't say anything and just gives $10 and a dancing maraca emoji thing. Thanks, Dawn. Cheers, love. Appreciate it. Really do. Honestly do. And shout out to Chris Dangerfield as well for naming her the Field Marshal and saluting her and going, Hoyt. She's written that into her name. Her name is at Field Marshal Dawn Browning hyphen Whit. So. Okay. Ninja Noodle 0944 says, do you not want nationalised banks? Look at China for crying out loud. No, I don't. No. Don't point at China and say, look how good they are, how great that is. Don't we want that? No. Thank you. Pass. I don't want a command economy. It's built on foundations of sand and nonsense. But no, pass. Okay. Tatum2733 says, what? No, it's too hot where they'd be coming from. In relation to an early one. Yeah, in the early one where you said, if it gets hotter, third world migration balloons. Oh, no, oh, you're saying if it gets hotter where they are in their third world countries, it gets too hot for them there. Right, I see what you're saying. It's just too hot there now. So they've got to come to slightly cooler climes. Yeah, quite possibly. I see what you mean. I get it. Okay. And the last one here today is from Carmichael Cookie Dough Foot Job again, who chimes in saying, what do you say? You say... Okay, this one is the last granny, then it's wife time. Thanks. Okay. Oh, one more's just popped in, and it's from Azzy, He says 0-0-1. He says, you versus Carl in an MMA fight, what happens? I destroy him. No, I don't know. Well, I don't know. I feel like I'll probably have better cardio, although Carl goes to the gym now. And if he did like loads and loads of low leg kicks, I've got like normal sized human man legs. Carl's legs, his calves are like tree trunks. They really are. We've been climbing a few times. I've seen him in shorts. If he was doing loads of leg kicks over and over again on me, he'd break my legs. But I feel like I'm faster. I would be faster. I think my cardio's better. It's much more about speed and aggression. He weighs more. I don't mean that as a diss, but like if you weigh more, that's an advantage. He weighs more. He's probably stronger. He's almost certainly stronger. But I would have speed. I would have speed. And probably a bit of skill. I've done a little bit. I did Tang Soo Do when I was a kid. Got halfway through, almost halfway to black belt, Tang Soo Do. I've done a little bit of MMA training, a little bit. Little bit of karate in my time. I've got a little bit of training. I've watched thousands, quite literally without exaggeration, thousands and thousands of fights. Boxing, jiu-jitsu, MMA, valet judo, loads and loads of stuff. Kind of know a little bit about what I'm doing. I feel like I probably know a little bit more about what to do than Carl. Would have the speed, the cardio. He weighs more, that's an advantage, and is almost certainly stronger. So, I don't know. Probably boil down to who wanted it more. Speed is a big thing, though. It really is. When someone's just got... I would have thought I've got a slightly longer reach as well. Maybe not, but I would have thought so. Might be a really close fight. If he got a giant haymaker in on me, it would be over, wouldn't it? Like, I know a little bit of ground game. I know a little bit about grappling. I don't think Carl does. He's never ever said, he might do, but he's never ever said anything about jiu-jitsu. Because I know the rudiments. That might make all the difference, something like that. But I've never really been truly tested. I don't know if I've got a glass jaw or not. I probably have. I don't know. I really don't know. A massive Carl Benjamin right hand, overhanded haymaker landing right on my temple, probably knocked me out cold. I don't know. Might be a really good fight. Might be brilliant. Anyway, that's the show. It's now 37 minutes past nine, 38 minutes past nine in the AM British summertime on Friday, the 14th of August in the year of our Lord, 2026. Thank F it's Friday, that's what I say. Try and make the best of the day, nay, the weekend ahead. Try and make it count if you can. Your time is the most valuable thing you will ever own, you will ever have. The only thing you have of value, any real value, is your time. Gold and gems and houses and cars, you can't take any of that with you. Ultimately, it's of no true value. Your time is, and it's finite. It's finite. Try and use it wisely if you can. All right, I don't want to get too preachy about it. You do you. You live your life the way you want to, but just be reminded. Seize the day. All right then, until Monday morning.